Welcome back to Arts About, the show about art that's a work of art in itself.
Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Mark. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you.
We forgot that John wasn't here to say
and
that.
Yes, I feel a bit naked without headphones too.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, you're right beside me.
That's good. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. You're listening to me, Sally Bailiw, and the philosophically inclined Mark Stewart. Brody's on the buttons and we've got a plethora of guests for your interest today. First up, we have Carol Pacciullo, friend of the show. She's going to be talking about the Youthful Dreamhouse Theatre Company and their imminent production, Stories in the Dark, at the end of March at the Southern Peninsula Arts Centre. We've also got impresario Tony Healy coming in. He's going to be telling us about the Normie Rowe, Johnny Young and Ross D. Wiley gig, due to spark a few memories and rock the pants off some of you baby boomers out there in the Mornington Community House on April the 1st. You might have heard the ad at the top of the show. And as well as that, I'm pretty excited to be talking to the Frankston Arts Centre's Programming Arts and Cultures Coordinator, Tammy Ryan, from the about their new incubator initiative called Hatch. It's a collaboration with the Creative Victoria, the local council and MTC that sees the Arts Centre developing a program to nurture and encourage new performance art. That's really fabulous. Mark, what have you got for us this week?
Well, something relatively interesting, mostly about calculation. The French have managed to come into it again. And Ada Lovelace, who is a great love of mine.
Who?
Ada Lovelace, Lord Byron's daughter.
Oh.
One of the first computer programmers.
What's her name, Ada?
Ada Augusta Lovelace, yes.
What a remarkable name. That is a good moniker, isn't it?
I'll tell you more about it.
Oh, okay. Well, look forward to that. This week, first up, earlier on last week, I went along to the official opening of the St Albans Community Centre new theatre, the Bowery Theatre, in honour of Son of Sunshine himself, Lee Bowery, who was a performance artist, fashionista, luminary, and just the most remarkable character to leave our shores and hit it big in the nightclub scene and art scene in London in the 80s. We'll talk about that later on, I think. At some point in the future, I think we'll get a little interview either with his father, Tom, or Tracy Hutchison, who was involved in the project. But last weekend, I went to an extraordinary gig in a private home facilitated by a new entity in the entertainment scene, Parlour Gigs, it's called. They provide the artist and ticketing, and you provide the venue. I was lucky enough to see Henry Wagons perform in a friend's house in Flinders with a group of 50. Extraordinary. He was marvellous. The format spectacular. It's a new way to see your favourite local artists. They get all the money. You get up there and very personal with them. Have a look at Parlour Gigs website. And in the meantime, here's star Henry Wagons with Give Me a Kiss. Carol Pacciullo is the artistic director of the teenage theatre company Dreamhouse, which is growing inside the Southern Peninsula Arts Centre as we speak. And we've had her on the show previously to talk about the amazing work that she's got going on down there. Coming up at the end of the week, Dreamhouse Theatre Company are presenting their latest production, Stories in the Dark, an Australian play by Australian writer Deborah Oswald. Carol is on the line with me at the moment to talk about it. Good morning, Carol. Thanks for coming on Arts About.
Thank you, Sally.
Carol, tell us a little bit about this Stories in the Dark. First of all, it's a pretty extraordinary storyline. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, the story was originally written around the siege of Sarajevo, but of course it really could be any time in a time of war, and of course we have plenty of examples of that at the moment, Syria being one. So the story centres around two teenagers, a 16-year-old called Anna and a little boy called Thomas, who find themselves pulled up in a bombed-out mansion in this fictional place. The war is still going on, and they discover each other there seeking refuge. And the little boy, particularly, who's 12, is quite traumatised. And to kind of calm them both down and give them some sense of hope, Anna tells these incredible sort of folk tales that she remembers, she kind of conjures up. Mm-hmm. And so the play kind of crosses between this very kind of raw and violent world to this, well, kind of violent also, but fantasy world of the stories, which are like kind of metaphors for what's happening in the real world.
I understand the play's already won several awards. It's won the 2008 New South Wales Premier Literary Award and the, is it the Theatre for Young Audience, 2008 AWGIE. What's that?
That's the Augie Awards, Australian Writers Guild Award.
Yep.
Yeah,
so it's already a wildly recognised play. The other thing I think is quite interesting metaphorically with this storytelling is the power of stories.
That
stories can be used for all sorts of reasons, for the resonance of them, and they're powerful instruments in our culture, aren't they?
They are, and I've in researching the play, I came across some wonderful quotes. Can I tell you one of those quotes?
Yes.
By Philip Pullman, who's the Northern Lights famous writer. He says, "After nourishment, shelter, and companionship, stories are the thing we need most in the world." And I thought that's so pertinent. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think that's sort of at the core of the play is the power of stories. And in fact, that Deborah Oswald has said that she wanted to explore the idea of how stories can heal. The power of stories and where they can work and where they can't work. She's kind of really interested in that idea, I think, of how the power of stories to heal us.
It's a very brave choice of work. You have the Dreamhouse Theatre Company is, of course, a not-for-profit that you are running down, housed mostly in Southern Peninsula Arts Centre, involving teenagers from all around, isn't it?
Yes, all teenagers, all based on the Southern Peninsula. So any teenager can come. At the moment, we've got teenagers from four different secondary schools on the peninsula, but it's open to anyone between the ages of 13, around 13 to 18. And the company's growing all the time, and we're always, looking for new young ones to join in, and because there's some of the older ones that'll be moving on, I guess, in the next year or so.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I've seen some of the rehearsals and I've seen some of the workshops that you have done down there, Carol, and I must say to everybody out there listening, this is extraordinary theatre. It's really very, very exciting theatre that you're creating down there.
Well, I'm very proud. I'm really proud of the kids because they are extremely disciplined and they're very creative, and I guess I try to create an atmosphere where they can experiment and take creative risks. We do a lot of improvisation and there's a lot of trust that builds in the group, and that allows them to feel like they can take those risks, because they're not being judged, and that's so important.
Absolutely. It makes for very, very vital theatre, doesn't it? And now it's on at the Southern Peninsula Arts Centre. It's the weekend coming up on the Friday the 31st of March at 7:30. And that's also right. Saturday the following day at 2 and at 7:30.
Yes.
What is the best way for people to find out a little bit about it and to get tickets at least?
Well, Try Booking is the best way to get tickets. Tickets are available at the door, but it'd be better to go to Try Booking. So
yes.
If you just put in Stories in the Dark, Dreamhouse Theatre Company, that'll take you to the link. Or else if look up Dreamhouse Theatre Company Victoria on Facebook. Or the Dreamhouse Theatre Company website, which is dreamhousetheatrecompany.com.au, and there'll be links there to the play and Try Booking. Yeah.
I will, of course, put links on our Facebook page as well. I can't wait to see what's going on down there. It's very, very, we're very lucky to have somebody like you orchestrating these kids down there. I know these kids are extremely talented. This looks like a terrific production, Carol.
Oh, thank you, Sal. I think it will be a production that appeals to a lot of different people, not just kids. It's a very profoundly moving and resonating show. I think it will really work for a lot of people.
Yes, of course, and Deborah Oswald's play is a remarkable piece of writing as well, as we have heard. That's wonderful. Good luck with it. As I said, I'll put a link on the Facebook page. That's next weekend, everybody, Friday and Saturday, three different performances. I recommend you get down there and see what our young people are doing. Thanks for talking to us today, Carol Pacciullo.
Thanks so much, Sally.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Our next guest this morning, Tammy Ryan, is the Coordinator of Programming of Arts and Culture for the Frankston Arts Centre. And she's here with us today to let us know about the new initiative that they are running down there called Hatch. The program is a collaboration between the Council, Creative Victoria and the Melbourne Theatre Company and offers professional development and assistance to local artists and performers, enabling them to create independent original works. It's designed to help guide emerging theatre makers and performing arts groups through the development process of an initial idea through to presenting it on stage. It sounds like our very own Fringe Masterclass. Tammy, thank you so much for coming on Arts About this morning. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sally.
Tell us, Tammy, how you came to get this extraordinary project off the ground, because it really has been very difficult over the last couple of years to wrangle any money out of anybody to do anything to do with the arts.
So Creative Victoria had an opportunity for outer metro councils. Mm-hmm. Frankston Arts Centre is not classified in a regional setting, so we often miss out on some of the funding for regional centres. Mm-hmm. Creative Victoria have recognised that and provided this funding specifically for outer metro areas, and having an understanding that artists shouldn't have to travel into the inner city to participate in such amazing opportunities like this.
So tell me, what form does it take for an artist who might be intersecting with the Frankston Arts Centre, performing artist or somebody with a great idea? How do they interact with you?
And that's one of the biggest gaps that I identified, is that the artist will have a particular idea or have a show in mind, but then they actually don't know what to do either. So what this masterclass series will do is to provide the artist with many different hats, because as an independent artist, they do have to wear many, many different hats. So we are going to provide a series of masterclasses on directing, how to produce your own work, structure and creativity around writing, storming an idea, and grant writing, which is
a
very, very
one.
Important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we found that artists may be aware to know how to direct, but then they don't know how to produce the work or how to get funding for their work. So this is going to be a real mentorship for them. With amazing facilitators that MTC are sourcing for us. And then that's the first stage, which will be in 2017. But then in 2018, that's when it gets really exciting as well, where we'll provide some in-kind rehearsal space. Mm-hmm. So these works can actually develop further. We're going to link them up with other established arts companies who align with their creative goals. And then hopefully in 2019, we'll be presenting some of these outcomes.
Oh, that's sensational, because it really is a very, very difficult thing. And lots of us we all know that often it's like working in a vacuum when you're an artist and you have little funds, you've got an idea, you've got a vision for something, but really to put on a production, you need to be you need to know about running a business, you need to know about the technical requirements, you need to know about how an institution like the Frankston Arts Centre operates, what kind of information they need, timescales, all these things, and then you also need to be able to interact with other theatre companies as well to do that. So this is a very exciting initiative, I think, that the Frankston Arts Centre are undertaking.
Yes, we're certainly trying to demystify all that and give the artists the tools so they can really flourish, and these works don't just remain in as concepts but actually have avenues to thrive.
So, and of course the other byproduct of this for the Frankston Arts Centre is that you're nurturing a new generation of young local artists who actually may be able to input content into the Frankston Arts Centre in the future.
Exactly. And then how amazing will it be if they're touring the country?
Yeah,
and they started at Frankston Arts Centre. So that's integral to the process as well. We really want some amazing participants who really have the passion and drive to go the whole way with their concepts right through to
performance. Hi. How do you choose the people?
It's an expression of interest application. So The details are available on Frankston Arts Centre's website. They just have to write a short bio about themselves, why they'd like to participate. All the masterclasses are free, and it's going to be capped at about 12 participants per class, so that can be a really targeted, intense workshop. So that expression of interest will be available on our website from this Friday.
Ah, terrific. That's wonderful. I've been involved and have seen and applaud the Neon series that runs out of the MTC that Brett Sheedy has kind of encouraged up there, which has been a series of independent plays, the organisation enabling other theatre companies to come in and use it, and also running workshops. I imagine that this is somewhat of a similar model.
Yes. So we... the partnership is specifically more with the masterclass series of Neon Next. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, we're hoping to then, once those plays or performances are produced and ready to show, then it will be Frankston Arts Centre presenting those shows to, yes, a similar model to what MTC have done.
So the website goes live pretty much in this next week.
Yes.
And what's the time frame? How does that move then?
So our first masterclass is on Saturday the 29th of April.
Oh, so very soon.
Yes, so very soon. So people need to get their expressions of interest in by the 19th of April. Mm-hmm. And then we'll contact participants fairly quickly after that. So there's probably about a 3 or 4 week period for artists to get their applications into us.
And what's the first one?
Directing mm-hmm. Masterclass. It's run by Leticia Caceres, who is an amazing director who is up and coming and has been involved with Sydney Theatre Company, Melbourne Theatre Company, Belvoir. So to just be in the same room with her for many of these artists will be an amazing opportunity.
Absolutely. It sounds really, it's really exciting. I can't wait to have a look at it and watch and see what happens, because we really want to see some great new stuff. One of the things that I meant to ask you, age-wise, is it for young artists? Is it for mid-career? Who can apply for this?
Look, in regards to age, it's for emerging artists. It's for people that have an amazing concept and who have the passion and drive to take that concept through to a performance stage. So it's probably from graduate, tertiary graduate level up. Mm-hmm. But yes, if you've had a hiatus for a number of years and you're wanting to come back and create a new theatre piece, that's absolutely fine. We don't mind how old you are, just as long as you have the great idea and the passion. Mm.
So you don't have to put your age on your application?
No.
Or sex, presumably. No. Fantastic. Okay. Tammy Ryan, thank you so much for coming into Arts About today to let us know about this. We'll put a link on our Facebook page about it. And I'd love to keep in the loop with you about things that are progressing.
Yes, I'd love to come back and keep updating you about the project's progress.
Fabulous. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks,
Tammy Ryan. Bye.
Bye.
Tony Healy is a name that many of you commotion watchers and go-set readers may be familiar with already. Part of the first wave of Australian musical artists and producers who realised the huge viewing potential that popular music had on the airwaves, Tony was among the earliest group who saw that potential and began promoting and presenting music to the Australian masses from the Ngunnawadding Studios of Channel O in the mid-60s. Commotion was really the big show that Channel O produced that sent the Australian music into the stratosphere, and a group of stars emerged from those early beginnings to dominate the music scene here in Australia, but also to impact on the world. Tony Healy was one of the presenters of that program, in fact becoming a bit of a star himself in those days, and has gone on to actively work and promote in that industry, among many other things that he's done. He's worked in show business marketing, film production, film festivals, and a film and music reviewer. He's also produced shows for John Farnham, Colleen Hewitt, and Russell Morris. In a previous life, he was a reporter for the teen music newspaper Go Set, the lead in the movie Fool's Gold, and a regular presenter of the 60s pop TV shows. In a couple of weeks, he's presenting a one-night-only gig at the Mornington Community Theatre, featuring old friends and massive pop stars of the 60s and 70s, Normie Rowe, Johnny Young and Ross D. Wiley. Tony, none are wadding in the 1960s and 70s.
So that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said. Could you read that out again? That's fantastic. I've never heard that. I didn't know it was so good.
You're really
I
good.
I can't remember it.
My goodness. Well, what was it like in none are wadding in those times? It must have been absolutely exciting.
Yeah, well, it was. I suppose it was the early 60s. And I think I was about 24, so it's a very long time ago. Black and white television, of course. But it's something you probably, when you reflect upon it, you enjoy it more so. I don't think any of us actually knew what we were doing. We just sort of partly thrown into it, but in a nice way. But it just seemed to be quite normal. But when you look back, it was quite a time.
Well, you were on the precipice of something rather big, and things really altered.
But we didn't know that.
No, I guess you don't. You were having fun and excited by it.
When you think about it, I mean, it was just like 12 years after television started in this country.
So yeah.
It was a bit strange, but we It was a bit. Well, actually, I used to work for the Sun newspaper at the time, and I would work from 7 p.m. till 3 a.m. and then drive out there and sleep in the car, in the car park. But that was quite normal. Get a hamburger on the way and a bourbon and Coke. But that was quite normal. But it sounds a bit stupid now, but that's the way it was. People just did things, you know.
Yeah. Well, when we were young, it was a lot easier as well, I guess, wasn't it?
You know? Oh, very much so. There was it was a different world entirely. And it was a fairly innocent world as well, in its own way. The rock and roll scene was, I suppose, was very, very young. And they were all kids, you know, they're all 17, 18-year-olds coming out of accountancy or leaving things to do to get into music. And people like Russell Morris, who was an accountant, you know, now he's just been, this his whole life has been singing.
Yeah.
You think about it, more than 50 years, he's been a singer. And same with Normie Rowe and these other guys too. They've actually made a career out of it, which is quite something. Probably never thought they would, but they did. You know,
and probably working. These days getting harder and harder to do. It's sort of big one-hit wonders or much shorter-lived careers these days.
Yeah.
But these three, the gig that you've got next week with these three, Ross Wiley, Johnny Young and Normie Rowe, they must be pretty good friends by now.
Oh, well, I suppose they are, having known them forever in a way. The remarkable thing, as I was saying, they're still working.
Yeah.
I mean, Ross, you know, is working from a wheelchair, basically, but he's been touring the country doing his two or three hits that he's got, and so has Normie. So, we've known them for a long time, but they're probably still... I mean, you look around, you've got your Ross Wilsons, Russell Morris, Daryl Braithwaite, Doug Parkinson, Kate Serrano, not so much, but all been working for 50 years, so they have been around for a while.
Mm. Now, these guys that in this particular show, Ross, Johnny and Normie, their careers have intersected on many levels. They're all recording stars, of course, but Johnny Young was also a songwriter.
A very successful one.
Yeah, a pretty amazing songwriter. Yeah. And Ross D. Wiley was a TV presenter. It was such a time of great potential and flexibility in the music industry, I think. And while Johnny was competing with Normie for careers, because they were at one time, weren't they? They were one followed the other.
Yeah,
Normie had
the
big hit to start with, and Johnny followed soon behind.
Yeah, that's correct.
But they were, you know, they were forging this new wave that then turned into television, you know, musical television.
Very much so. I mean, as I said, they probably didn't know that they were competing at the time. John Young came over from Perth, I recall, and Normie would, you know, it started off in Preston somewhere at a dance hall.
Mm-hmm.
So as their popularity through television, I must admit, grew, and radio was pretty big in those days, Stan Rofe type radio.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were competitive, but not working against each other. But the demand, as I said, these other guys, you had Farnham as well, of course, working in those days. And went and saw him the other night. He's still unbelievable. Yeah. So they were competitive, but they all found their own niche within that recording and television industry, perhaps. Yeah.
So this show, it's a one-off that's going to be down here at Mornington. How did that come together?
Well,
that you're making?
Not exactly. No, Ross Wiley... Mm. Who lives over in Mulgrave, and he's a member of the Mulgrave Country Club, and he thought he'd put a show on because John Young lives in Perth, Normie lives on the Gold Coast, so the Mulgrave Country Club, which has 35,000 members or otherwise, they just market it to that, and then he thought, well, to help cover his costs, basically, it'd be good to have a third show on this side of town.
Mm.
So he came to me, we had a chat, and thought we'd have a go at it. So And that's exactly what we're doing, having a go at it. It's a good fit, I would like to think. The tickets are tickets still available. It's a little slower than I thought, but hopefully there'll be a rush in this coming week.
That's the eternal words of every single promoter of everything, whether it's theatre, whether it's music, is that, you know, people leave it until the last moment.
Well,
it's
I'm probably
terrifying.
Guilty of that too. Yes, I am. But the thing that's impressed me is the Peninsula Community Theatre. It's fantastic. The facilities, the lighting, the staging. It's got two green rooms. It's got lifts and loading bays. It's as good as anything in Melbourne. Now, most people, or many people, may think this is a theatre show. It's not, because it's fully licensed. There's food truck catering and so on. So it's the perfect venue for something like this. And ideally, this would establish it, or could help establish it, as a cabaret night out venue. And that's what I'd like to do, because then it's still the same market, I think. I mean, I'd love to have Ross Wilson and Brian Cadd or somebody down here. I think it'd be a fantastic night out. This is an expensive show. The other ones won't be as expensive, because this is three artists. But I think the venue is fantastic, and it's a matter of educating or hoping people will come along and try it out. Then I'll put tablecloths, I'll put candles. We can do all sorts of things.
Well, I've seen Meow Meow performing there a few years ago, and that was a really remarkable night. It would be fabulous to see a lot more going on in there, that's for sure.
Well, the thing, I'm not promoting booze, but in a sense it's nice to sit down and have a drink and watch a show nowadays, you know. I don't know what Meow Meow, whether they
had
that.
Yes, they did. It was round tables and...
Well, it's the same format, really, just trying to build it a bit. And I've not been to anything there, but I just think it's a beautiful venue for any form of entertainment.
So what are they going to be playing? Are we going to hear all the fabulous numbers that we might expect, the big hits from,
from
the three of them?
Between the three of them, I don't think they've got a new one. but all the old chestnuts, I suppose. That's what people want to hear. You know, often these artists... Not these, but some artists will come out with wanting to sell their latest wares. But really, most of the people just want to hear their old stuff.
They do.
And they have got plenty between the three of them. Normie's got some fantastic... And Normie is an amazing performer. He's lost nothing. Johnny Young's still there.
Is it rude to ask what age they might be now?
Normie Rowe just turned 70.
Yep.
A couple of months ago, or 6 weeks ago. John Young turned 70 last week. And Ross is 72.
Isn't that incredible?
So they're older than Australia, if you put them all together.
But you know what? The boss, Bruce Springsteen. He's way up there. And I heard the most extraordinary reports about the energy that this man still has on stage.
Well, look at the Rolling Stones.
Exactly.
He's 74.
And Leonard
Paul
Cohen.
Well, he's not working anymore, Leonard.
No, but I saw him not so long before he did pass away. Yeah. And, you know, that age has not dimmed him at all.
Well, I think there's a market for it, you know. People aren't getting sick of it, and a lot of young people go to the Rolling Stones, and they're all in their 70s. Yeah. Some of them do look like they've passed away.
That's true.
But they're work, you know, try and buy a ticket for any of their shows. And I think this is not in any measure to be compared with that. But there is the baby boomer market, I think, is where it's all heading. Some, like the Stones, are attracting younger audiences. I don't suggest these guys will attract much younger audiences, but it's geared for an older audience,
Yeah, of course. Details. How do people... First of all, it's Saturday the 1st.
Saturday the 1st. Doors open at 7. The show... It's a three-hour show, which seems of an interval, but a three-hour show, so it'll finish about after 11. The show will start about 8.
Cabaret style,
yeah. It's an entertainment show, you know. It's not just a loud rock and roll show. It's more about that. They tell stories, and some that they perhaps shouldn't, that should have stayed on the road. I don't know. There's a bit of nostalgia in there. And I think the communication, John Young's very good at communicating. The others are very, very good performers as such. So the show will start about 8, finished around 11. As I say, it's fully licensed, and there'll be food available also.
Fantastic. So the way to get tickets is to go on to, is it Try Booking?
Yes, trybooking.com. And if you go on there, it's an online booking service. We may be able to sell some tickets on the night as well. At the door. We'd do that, just a credit card, and work that through.
Fantastic. And I will, of course, put a link on the Facebook page. I think that you were perhaps going to make an offer.
Oh, yeah. Well, just look, we're happy to give some, just a little competition. You can do it on your Facebook page or otherwise. but a couple of tickets to give away. We'll give away four tickets if you wish, or two doubles.
Two doubles. Why don't we do two doubles?
You can work
that out. If you're listening out there, send me a message on our Facebook page and we'll make sure that there are a couple of tickets waiting for you at the door on that night. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much
Thanks,
for coming
Sal.
In,
Thank
Tony
you very
Healy.
Much. Yeah, enjoy
and we look forward to hearing how it goes. It'll be, I suspect, a fantastic night.
Well, it better be, otherwise. I hope so.
See you soon.
Thank you.
We're going straight on here, Mark. Yes,
I
we
see.
Are. What are you going to talk to us today about?
I'm going to talk about calculation and mathematics. I'm not feeling that inspired, but I'll get there.
Oh, calculation and mathematics.
Could be.
Are you uninspired by the subject matter, or are you uninspired?
Well, I thought I was, but I'm no. But I'm getting a little less. But we'll go through. We'll
okay.
see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
So, and it's going back to the French again, which I didn't intend, but we'll deal with it. So, in 1791, Gaspard de Prony.
Love the name Gaspard.
Gaspard's a lovely name, yes. Mm. Born in 1755, died in 1839, embarked on the task of producing logarithmic and trigonometric tables for precise land surveying, remembering that mathematics was invented by the Egyptians to measure and sell land. After the revolution, he had to bring uniformity to the multiple measurements and standards used throughout the nation. The tables were vast, with values calculated to between 14 and 29 decimal places. He was inspired.
14 and 29? That's
a lot of
that's
tables.
That's little, isn't it?
Yeah. He was inspired by Adam Smith's Wealth of the Nations. So he divided up the labor into three levels, bragging he could manufacture logarithms as easily as one manufactures pins. He organized five of France's top mathematicians who decided how to compute the tables. Half a dozen more broke down the operations into single stages, and the work itself, which was restricted to addition and subtraction, was done by 80 computers, people who had no more than a rudimentary knowledge of arithmetic and carried out the most laborious and repetitive parts of the process.
So when you say computers, you don't actually mean technological computers,
no, I mean
you
people.
Mean people who compute.
Who computed, exactly. Many were out-of-work hairdressers because with the guillotine of the aristocracy, the hairdressing trade, which attended to the elaborate hairstyles of the elite, was in recession.
Oh, oddly enough.
But for the first time, mass production was applied to calculation. Now, in 1812, a Mr. Charles Babbage, I don't know if you've any, if you're into computers, you might have heard, he's considered one of the fathers of computing, born in 1791 and died in 1871, was sitting in his rooms in the Analytical Society in London and looking at a table of logarithms he knew to be riddled with errors because they'd been made by humans, but were central to navigation, science, engineering, and mathematics. And having heard of Gaspard de Prony's efforts, he had the idea of computing all tabular functions by machine. He designed the difference engine, which mostly for budgetary reasons wasn't built until 1991. After the project fell through, Babbage worked to design a more complex machine called the analytical engine, which marks a transition from mechanized arithmetic to fully fledged general purpose computation. This is in about 1820. The engine was programmed using Jacquard's punched cards, a major innovation to control a mechanical calculator, which could use as input preceding computations. That's the important part. So they're already using, it's like the data, collecting data, it learns by themselves. Okay. Mm-hmm. His invention eventually led to more complex electronic designs, though all the essential ideas of modern computers are to be found in Charles Babbage's analytical engine. Now, Ada Augusta Lovelace, Lord Byron's only legitimate child, born in 1815, died in 1852 at the age of 36.
Her first name was?
Ada. And Lord Byron left her mother, Anne Isabel Milbank, a month after Ada's birth, fled to Europe and died in Greece 8 years later without seeing his daughter again. Ada's mother promoted her interest in mathematics and logic in an effort to prevent her from insanity like her father. Yes. He was a bit
creative
of a tough...
Creative arts were considered,
well, he
presumably.
He was quite mad. Lord Byron. Brilliant poet. Anyway, Ada Lovelace corresponded with Babbage during the development of his analytical engine and was one of the first to see the potential of the machine. She wrote the first algorithm to calculate a sequence of Bernoulli numbers, so is often described as the first computer programmer. She developed a vision of the capability of computers to go beyond mere calculating or number crunching, while many others, including Babbage, focused only on that. Her mindset of poetical science led her to ask questions about the engine, examining how individuals and society relate to technology as a collaborative tool. So, the word algorithm, I think I've spoken about this before, comes from Al-Khwarizmi, 1780 to 850, a Persian mathematician, astronomer, geographer, and scholar in the House of Wisdom in Baghdad.
That's a good title, isn't
yeah.
it?
So, just to finish off, I don't think I've spoken about the last major tank battle, Brody. This was in 1991, the same year as that Babbage's machine was finally built. The last tank battle of modern warfare was fought in the Iraqian desert during the Gulf War, with the American Abrahams up against the battle-hardened Iraqians in the Soviet T-72s. It is extremely difficult to navigate in the desert, and the Iraqis felt pretty confident they had the upper hand in their own environment, but the Americans had a secret weapon, which was GPS. And it's now on your phone.
Yes, it is now on our phone. How extraordinary. You would never in a million years have thought that Byron's daughter was the first computer programmer.
She's worth looking up. She had three children, died of uterine cancer at the age of 36, unfortunately, but beautiful portrait of her.
ADA?
ADA Augusta Lovelace, married to some aristocrat.
Gosh. Yeah, well, there you
and
are.
And she actually realised there was... digital music. She realised that there was a possibility of that as well. So she was way ahead of her time. Brilliant.
Good heavens, that's extraordinary. Mm. Well, that's wonderful. Now, of course, we're missing John this week.
We are. John's probably in the bowels of the Mona, no?
Maybe. He was going over to Bruny Island. I'm not sure if he was going to Mona or not.
He was, yes. Right. He was down there.
I wondered, actually, whether or not you were aware, Mark, that the first of the programmes for Dark Mofo has been announced. Nordic death metal.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Take your earphones. Your earplugs.
Exactly. Well, why don't we play another piece of music? Let's go with the fabulous Amy Winehouse with Our Day Will Come.
Lovely girl.
She was a gorgeous, gorgeous creature. So tell me, did you go and have a look at an exhibition recently, Mark?
Yes, I went to the Mornington Peninsula Gallery.
Oh, you saw Texter Queen.
I saw Texter Queen, and Stephen Munchen was the guy that John's couldn't remember his name last week.
Oh, yes, he mentioned him.
Lots of drawings of gas and farts and quite interesting setup. I don't think I really understood exactly what was going on. I think I need to have another look. But I did have a close look at Texter Queen's work, which is, she has quite an agenda.
Mm-hmm. Is it political?
Very political, which is, as far as I'm concerned, art shouldn't be political. Mm. I think it's more about mystery and poetry than about politics, but doesn't seem to be the case these days. She had a bit of an agenda. She's Indian and born in Perth, so... Australian, but apparently suffered from a lot from racism, perhaps sexism as well. I don't know. It's
Well, we all deal with that.
We all have to deal with it at some stage. Whether you want to publicise it is another thing. But she did some decent work, quite well presented, but just a little graphic. Not really. Yes. It's more.
They're big, aren't they?
They're big. Yeah, you've seen them, have you?
No, I've seen some of her work. I will go up to this exhibition this week and have a look. I've seen other examples of her work, and I know that they are.
Mm. Yes. There were the lovely photos of her wrapped in kelp, which was quite beautiful, and in bushes in Point Nepean, because she had one of those artist residencies up there.
Oh, yes, at Police Point.
Yep.
So the other man, Stephen Munchen, he was a drawer.
Well, then, he built a model of it seemed to be a little bit like Wilbur Defoe's... poo machine in Mona.
Oh, yes, it was the cloaca machine.
Yeah, it was... I really didn't actually have a close look at it. I was a little bit disturbed by Texter Queen stuff. So when I went in there,
I could
see that he was a very good drawer. He knew how to draw and he knew how to put things on paper. But I hope he's not listening, because I actually didn't. I missed the whole point of what his show was about.
Oh, okay then.
Which is terrible. I'll have to rectify that.
Yes, maybe you better go and have another look.
I will.
Now, up at McClelland, there's a new exhibition too. I don't suppose you've seen that Dormitorium, have you?
No.
No, Matthew Bird. I'd quite like to have a look at that. And as we mentioned earlier on, or last week, we're still a little in the dark about what's going on at McClelland.
Who the next administrator is going to be.
Yes, or the new
director. And what happened to the last one.
Yes, exactly. We haven't been given very much of a word except to say that he resigned.
Sounds very, very suspicious somehow.
Yes, well, we'd like to know, basically, I think.
Well, we will. We'll find out.
I can hear music in the background. It must be time for the news, Mark.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, bring it on.
Came on a bit of a surprise. We're a little bit out of sorts today. I'm certainly behind the eight ball. Okay, coming up this week, Stories in the Dark, the Dreamhouse Theatre Company's production, which is on at the Southern Peninsula Arts Centre on the 31st and 1st of April. Tickets on Try Booking. Check our Facebook page for details and a link for that.
Music legends Normie Rowe, Johnny Young and Ross D. Wiley are here for one night only gig at the Mornington Community Theatre in Mornington on the 1st of April. Tickets at Try Booking or at the desk on the night.
Or if you'd like to go along and you want to contact me on Facebook, the first couple of people that do, I'll make sure that there are some tickets at the door for you.
Hatch, free tickets.
Free tickets, yes, with your name attached to them. Hatch, the new incubating initiative, is running at Frankston Arts Centre for any performance artists out there who would like some assistance to develop your ideas into a successful show. Get in touch or go onto the Frankston Arts Centre website to find out how to get involved and when to get involved.
Don't mention your age. Watch a film, Save a Culture. The premiere of Rob Henry's feature, As Worlds Divide, is on at the Fred Square Friday, March 25th. Tickets at Eventbrite.
Oh, actually, I think I should have taken that out, because I think that might have been last night.
Okay.
Anyway.
No problem.
Yes. Sorry about that. Gregorian Brothers are on tonight at the Frankston Arts Centre.
That'd be good. They're great guitarists.
Yes.
Sarah Faulkner's exhibition Country closes today. Nicholas Thompson, Gallery 426.
Gallery. If you haven't seen it, you should have gone and had a look.
She's a good painter.
She's a wonderful painter.
She's very good painter.
Between now, there's what's this other one here on at the MPRG? Texter Queen, as Mark mentioned just a little bit earlier. Between You and Me, it's a survey exhibition of her portraits, exploring gender, race, and identity through the medium of fibre-tip pens.
Dormitorium is the new exhibition to open at McClelland, an interactive sculptural project by Melbourne-based architect Matthew Bird, examining the bedroom.
Well, that's up your boulevard, isn't it, Mark?
Definitely.
Yes. Frankreate Photographic Competition, Home is Where the Heart Is. They were on the show last week. Open to all ages and abilities. Entries closed today, so if you haven't got one in yet, do it this afternoon.
What does all abilities mean? You can be really bad and you can still go.
I guess so, yeah. Okay. You could be really terrible and put one in. Or it is a funny line, isn't it? I think they probably mean all ages and experience, don't they? If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. You can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the near future. The show's also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Please join us again 11 a.m. Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know what we like.
Sure do.
That future's been coming for a long time, huh?
Yeah. Is it ever going to get here?